T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
And away we go, ladies and gentlemen, hour number 3, the money hour of the Rob Brown Show. Back on your radio, it's ESPN Upstate. It is Wednesday, 3 minutes after 2 o'clock. Great to be with you. Thanks for hanging out. I am Rob Brown, the great one Lonzo, back at the network studio in charge of button switches, levers, knobs, and the like. Man, you hit the third hour, and it's just, ooh, it's a jumble. All right, a lot of stuff to get to in this hour of the show. I found this interesting, though. ESPN has put out their post-spring top 25 college football power rankings. And I'm kind of interested in it because I can't tell, Lonzo. Ordinarily, a troll job stands out to me. I've been doing this so long that I can sniff out a troll. All right, I can sniff out a troll. I can tell when somebody's trolling versus when somebody's being genuine. I can't tell if this is a troll job or not, Lonzo. Here are the ESPN's post-spring, college football power rankings, their top 25. At number 25, they've got Miami. Number 24, Arizona State. Penn State at 23. Texas at 22. They have the Coastal Carolina Chanticleers at number 21. LSU at number 20, 19 Ole Miss, Wisconsin 18, Florida 17, Louisiana Ragin' Cajuns at number 16, that's ooh la la, Washington at number 15, Iowa, the Hawkeyes at 14, USC 13, that would be the Trojans, number 11, Indiana, your top 10, number 10, Oregon, Cincinnati at number 9, North Carolina at number 8, 7, Texas A&M, 6, Iowa State. Number 5, Lonzo, is where they have the Ohio State Buckeyes. At number 4, they have the Clemson Tigers. At number 3, Dogs, they have Alabama at number 2. And the number 1 team in the country after spring, Lonzo, they have the 9-2, 6-2 in conference, Oklahoma Sooners, on the tail end of a 21-year national championship drought. They have Lincoln Riley. They say that the transfer portal has been very good to Oklahoma. There are a lot of transfers that have added onto this roster. 6 FBS, including 3 from Tennessee. Running back Eric Gray, offensive tackle Wanya Morris, and defensive back Key Lawrence. All 3 of those volunteers are projected to start for Oklahoma this year. They also added former Arkansas receiver Mike Woods, who is a tremendously talented wide receiver, just didn't fit into the Arkansas system. He had 5 catches for 84 yards in the spring game. They also brought in former Penn State quarterback Micah Bowens, after they had a couple of quarterbacks transfer out. Bowens will battle freshman quarterback Caleb Williams for the backup job behind Spencer Rattler, projected to be a Heisman Trophy contender this year. Zoe, I don't hate Oklahoma this year. Oklahoma has really embraced the transfer model and filled in a couple of gaps via transfers this year. But to put them at number one in football's power rankings after the spring, I can't tell if they legit think that or if this was just a way to get some clicks.
Sounds like free agency is working really well for Oklahoma. And the thing is, you know, you bring in a bunch of players who have played elsewhere, then you actually have tape on the players as opposed to the freshmen coming in and you don't know how they're going to play. So, and Oklahoma's been up there top five like every year, right? So it's really not that much of a stretch to put them at number one. Because who's the quarterback for Alabama? Who's the quarterback for Ohio State? We know who the quarterback is for Clemson, but he's only started, what, one game? So, I mean, at least with Oklahoma, they have a lot of proven players. So I get it. And it's just power rankings. It's not like it's the first poll or something. I'm sure that will work itself out, and Alabama probably will be number one.
Alabama lost six first-round NFL draft picks. Six. That is not going to be easy to overcome. Bryce Young will be the QB for the Crimson Tide, stepping into Mac Jones' spots, 25 of 44 for 333 yards and a touch, no picks in their spring game against the first team. And Nick Saban has brought in a guy who is on that list of guys that make terrible head coaches but could make very good coordinators, Bill O'Brien. Yes, that Bill O'Brien, the former Houston Texans head coach, is his offensive coordinator this year. Bill O'Brien made a huge emphasis for the Crimson Tide on ball security as they had a handful of turnovers in some questionable spots last year. The freshman wide receiver who came in, Agaye Hall, was very impressive during the spring game as well. But remember, they lost both Devontae Smith and Jalen Waddle to the draft. I'm fine with knocking Alabama down a peg. Now, I'm not going to take them out of the SEC champion spot until Georgia or Florida finally prove to me that they are ready to cross that line and step into the next level. But to say that they're just going to replace six first-round NFL draft picks and be ready to make another run at a national championship, though, I don't mind Alabama getting knocked down a peg. It's not so much about Alabama getting knocked down or Clemson. I mean, look, same boat with the Clemson Tigers. We know the guys that they lost between TL16 and Travis Etienne and Amari Rogers and Darian Kendrick and Jackson Carmen and Cade Stewart. They've added some big names. Jeremiah Trotter Jr. to come in and play linebacker. Will Shipley at the running back position. Peyton Page, Bo Collins at defensive tackle and wide receiver. They have influxed some talent, but that's a heck of a list of guys to have lost with Lawrence Etienne and Rogers up there. I don't mind Alabama and Clemson, and heck, even Ohio State without Justin Fields. Trey Sermon is gone as well. Sean Wade, one of the most prolific defensive backs in college football this year, is gone. But they bring in Trevion Henderson, a highly recruited running back. Marvin Harrison Jr., yes, I am old enough now that the kids of my favorite NFL players are now playing in college football. It hurts every year. My knee just got a little more sore. My hair just went a little more gray reading Marvin Harrison Jr. But I don't have an issue with Clemson and Alabama getting knocked down a peg, though. The only question I have about it is Oklahoma jumping all the way up to number one. That's a big leap for a team that was 9-2 last year.
It doesn't bother me that much. It really doesn't, for the things that I said. The fact that they're bringing in players that are already played on that level and should play well for that team. And Oklahoma's been right there every year. It was just a matter of time before they jumped up ahead of the other guys. Will they stay there? Who knows? But they're how many years have they been top five now?
A handful.
Well, since Lincoln Riley's been there, it's been almost every single year. So it's not really that much of a stretch. When you said Oklahoma, I was like, okay, because I thought it was going to be some team that there was no way. But I'm okay with Oklahoma being there for right now, because we don't know exactly how the other teams are going to do when they get on the field, other than the fact that they always do well. So I don't know.
Big D, text into the show on the Ingles Market text line at 71307. Start your text with ESPN. Big D says, no way is Oklahoma the number one team. I say they drop two games this year. They are loaded. Look, we don't prognosticate where a team is in the rankings based on who they might lose to. We take a look at the rankings based on what they're doing as we stand. Oklahoma right now is lined up at Tulane, back home for Western Carolina. Then they play Nebraska, then West Virginia. West Virginia, question mark game, but I think Oklahoma should be better. They got Kansas State, should be a win. Texas should be a win. TCU could be a contested game, but I'll give them credit. Then they're at Kansas, back home for Texas Tech, at Baylor, back home for Iowa State, and then on the road at Oklahoma State. I mean, 10-2 is probably about the worst that I would project Oklahoma, though. I could see 11-1 unless they just drop a game they got no business losing for whatever reason, defense reloading, et cetera. Oklahoma might very well be a playoff team this year, the more that I look at it.
And they have been quite a few times. They don't seem to get it done when they get to the playoffs, but we'll see. Everything that you've talked about, it sounds about right, them being where they are.
Sure.
It just sounds weird it not being Alabama or Clemson as number one.
Of the following teams, who is too high, who is too low? Number two, Alabama. Number three, Georgia. Number four, Clemson. Number five, Ohio State. Of those four, Zoe, who is too high and who is too low for you?
But see, the problem is thinking of how everyone, all the players that they lost, it's really, really hard to judge. If anything, all right, I'm going to go with my bias and say that Ohio State is too low. just because I had this, because I think it's about right. But if I have to pick one, I'm going to go with where my heart is and say Ohio State needs to be up at least one notch.
Ohio State returning 7 offensive starters, 5 on defense, not a single special team specialist is coming back this year. I don't know, man. I think they're good. I think they're probably right about where they're supposed to be at number 5. I mean, Justin Fields was a phenomenal quarterback, and Trey Sermon absolutely picked up the slack late in the season. Those are two really big losses, really big losses. The team I have the biggest question mark about is Georgia. 8 offensive starters coming back, just 4 on defense, 2 special teams experts coming back. They had a handful of first, second, and third rounders head to the draft this year. They've added a couple of guys through the transfer portal. None that really jump out as immediate difference makers. Georgia has not won a national championship in 41 years at this point. I do think they're kind of getting to a now or never mentality. Like, we got to get it done this year or we'll never get it done. JT Daniels, a one-time transfer from USC, is poised to take over in his second season, completed 67% of his passes for over 1,200 yards, 10 touchdowns, and just 2 picks in the final 4 games of last year. George Pickens, star wide receiver, tore an ACL in his right knee during spring practice, so Georgia will likely be missing him for the first few several games of the season. There's still a lot of playmakers out there for the Bulldogs, but my only question for Georgia is going to be, I'm fine with their being ranked where they are. Talent-wise, I think they're absolutely one of the best 3 or 4 teams in the country. The only question I have for them, Zoe, is the same one that we had for Oklahoma. When you come up against the Floridas, against the Alabamas, if you make it to the playoffs against the Ohio States and the Clemsons of the world, can Kirby Smart finally turn that corner and get them coached up to win those games? Because traditionally in the past 4 or 5 years, they haven't won those big necessary games. They've got the talent this year, Zoe. I got to say, Kirby's running out of excuses. It's kind of tough because you don't want to be mad at a coach who's getting you 10-2, 11-1 seasons every year. But at some point, you want to stop being the bridesmaid and start being the bride. Can Kirby Smart get them to turn the corner and win those big games that they have been dropping year after year? 844-477-3776, 844-GSP-ESPN. Text us at 71307, 71307. Start your text with ESPN so we can read them on the air. Let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll hear what Nick Saban had to say about those name, image, and likeness laws that are passing around the country. Is he on board or not? I'll tell you next on the Rob Brown Show at ESPN Upstate.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
The Rob Brown Show rolls on. This is ESPN Upstate, 844-477-3776, 844-GSP-ESPN. Text us on the Ingles Market text line at 71307, 71307. Start your text with ESPN so we can read them on the air. So Nick Saban was asked at a charity golf tournament how he felt about the name, image, and likeness laws that are being passed around the country right now. And he kind of came down as, I don't want to say non-committal about them. I don't want to say non-committal. But he came down kind of between Lonzo and I. And we know Nick Saban is an established, dare I almost say, dominant voice in college football. And he's earned that. Here's what Nick Saban had to say when asked about the NIL loss.
What is your thoughts on the new name, image, likeness program, and just how do you see that affecting?
Well, I'm not sure anybody knows for sure how to impact it or affect it, because we don't know for sure what the parameters are and what the rules are. Look, I'm all for the players. My biggest concern is, how do we manage this? How do we police it? How do we make sure that it's fair for everybody? I think, you know, the NCAA has always, you know, tried to keep a level playing field for everyone. So hopefully this is not something that, it will be fair for everyone.
So that's where Nick Saban comes down. He says, look, we have no idea how to regulate this thing. We don't know what the impacts are going to be, and we need to find a way to keep it safe, level, and fair for everyone. And fairness has been the big talking point of the great one over there, Lonzo. But, I'm going to go ahead and say, whether you like it or not, you might as well go ahead and prepare yourself. It's happening. If Alabama's governor, Kay Ivey, has already signed off on it, and she has, and now Nick Saban is saying, I'm cool with it as long as it's regulated and fair, that's two enormous voices with enormous sway around the country and to the NCAA as a whole. I would be relatively confident saying at this point, though, that all 50 states are going to have NIL laws in place probably. Now, some have decided to push theirs back. I know, North Dakota said that theirs will go into effect in, 2024, 2025. I wouldn't be shocked to see that accelerated at some point if more and more college football coaches start saying, hey, look, you're going to put us in the hole for 2 or 3 years of recruiting. If states like Alabama and Florida are already passing and allowing their laws to go into effect. But this is one of those things that it's picked up steam. Saban's on board, even if it's only because of the fact that he knows that he might lose some recruits to Georgia and Florida and Alabama, states that have already said the NIL laws will go on the books this year. Regardless of his reason for saying what he said, though, the fact that Saban's on board and the fact that that Kay Ivey, the governor of Alabama, signed the NIL laws in that state into effect, I would say these things are going to happen sooner rather than later.
How much steam has it really picked up, though? I mean, we've heard about this for a while. Been looking like it's going to happen, but it ain't happened yet. And when it does, how much does the NCAA regulate the thing? And if so, if they're doing a lot of it, how often do they react in an expedient way as far as that goes? Hardly
ever.
Rarely. Yeah. So, whatever amount of steam you believe is picked up, and you're probably right, it probably will happen. But when's the time frame you think it's going to happen? Because I think the problems that I have with it and the problems that that Nick Saban mentioned, those need to be addressed. And until they can figure that out and make it sound fair for everyone else, even though it's not going to be, at least make it sound fair, that's going to take a while. And are we talking this season or next season? When do you think this is going to come into play?
Well, the thing is, it's also state by state. It's not just about what the NCAA says, does and wants. It's state by state. The states have to approve those laws as well. And a few states already have done so. Alabama's done so. Georgia's done so. Mississippi's done so. Florida's done so. And there are a bunch of states outside of the South that have done it as well. Although the primary push, interestingly enough, at least it's interesting to me anyway, the primary push has come from the South. It's the SEC and ACC territories that have really kind of said, we're going to not only do this, but we're going to accelerate it. And listen, if Florida, Georgia, Mississippi, Alabama are all getting on board and they know it's going to give them a recruiting edge, even if it's only for a couple of years, then the coaches are going to take it. They're going to absolutely say yes. They're going to go with it, and that's what's coming here. How long before they go into effect? Like I said, I think that's a state-by-state thing. I believe Alabama's, Florida's, Georgia's, Mississippi's, I think they all go into effect for next season. So they wouldn't be in effect for this year's incoming class, but they would be for next season's class. But again, if they start getting approved for 2022, I could see some states try to start pushing them into law for this upcoming fall just to get it done, get it over with, and get the first reaction out of the way and start to tinker with it as we go. So, I don't know. We're going to find out. But like I said, if Nick Saban's on board and Kay Ivey, the governor of Alabama, has already signed it into place, I would say the argument about whether we should or we should not is basically over at this point. We are. So now it's just a question of how do we regulate it.
So who's the first player that decides I'm not making enough money here and hits the transfer portal to go to another school where they can make more endorsement money?
That is a real life question that will have to be addressed. Real life question. You're gonna make more. You're gonna have the opportunity, unless though, and this is what I think one thing will happen. Unless they say you can make money, but they put a cap on it, right? You can only make $2,000 a season or $5,000 a season or whatever it is. If they put a cap on it, then it probably won't matter. There are going to be some car dealerships in Alabama, in Tuscaloosa, that, you know, they'll put a coalition together under the table, and they'll just say, hey, we're just going to give whatever the cap is, we're just going to give it to every recruit. Every five-star we want, you're going to get a $10,000 handshake because that's the cap before you step foot on campus. We're just going to ask you to show up to our car dealership, you know, every Friday before the game the next day, and you're already guaranteed that money. But though, the rich getting richer and the poor getting poorer has been a reality of college football for decades. That's not new. There's 10, 12, 15, 20 other situations where rules are in place that benefit the big guys because they can address it more and it's easier for them to deal with it than the little guys. And this is the first time it's come up, and I just find it interesting that the first time that I hear people start screaming about how it's unfair to the little schools happens to be the first time that it's for the benefit of the players and not the schools themselves.
I was going to say, all I can say is if you believe there's purity in college football, maybe there is to a certain degree, it's now just about gone. So go to your local high school and watch some football where they're playing for the love of the game and not out for the dollar.
If you believe that there is purity in college football, I need you to call the show and tell me, because I need to figure out how to change my switch to blind optimism too. All right. 71307 is the text line, the Ingles Market text line. Start your text with ESPN. Let's take a break. We'll come back here in just a minute and roll on with the Rob Brown Show. It's ESPN Upstate. Is the number to be a part of the broadcast today. Chelsea Real Madrid coming up at 3 o'clock, just about 23 minutes from now in the semifinal of the Champions League, the second leg. This one will be at Stamford Bridge. Thomas Tuchel is taking over for Frank Lampard. At that point in time, Chelsea was ninth in the Premier League and was not favored as a contender in the Champions League, but they have dramatically improved since then. They are now favorites to finish in the top four. They are one game away from their first Champions League final since 2012. They also have the FA Cup final against Leicester City to come later this month as well. The Blues were the better side in the first leg in Real Madrid last week, but were held to a 1-1 draw after Christian Pulisic's opener was canceled out by Karim Benzema. That match, again, is going to be at 3 o'clock this afternoon. It'll be on BT Sport 2. Coverage starts right around kickoff. And, yes, Christian Pulisic is projected to be in the starting lineup today. It's not a guarantee, though. It's not a guarantee that Pulisic will get the nod. He did start the last two matches, so today may be a rest day. They'll bring him on as a reserve to get those fresh legs going later on in the match. But we will talk about that, break that down coming up tomorrow on the show. What else do we have that we haven't gotten yet? Oh, yeah, that's right. I wanted to get to this one. How bad at your job in professional sports do you have to be where a team can come out openly and say that they want you fired? That's it doesn't ever happen. And there have been some folks in different major league organizations that have been hot garbage and have not had a team get called out to fire them. The New York Rangers of the National Hockey League released a statement yesterday calling for the firing of NHL head of player safety George Parros after his department decided not to suspend Washington Capitals forward Tom Wilson following an absolute melee at Madison Square Garden. The NHL fined Wilson $5,000 for roughing Rangers forward Pavel Buchnevich during the second period of Monday's game. It is the maximum allowable fine under the collective bargaining agreement. But Wilson was also not disciplined for throwing Artemi Panarin to the ice and punching him moments later as a brawl between the two teams continued. Ryan Strome, Rangers forward, quote, "I just think it's a joke, to be honest with you. I know it's not my responsibility to make decisions, but I just can't believe that. I think it sends a bad message, in my opinion. I think everyone pretty much agrees with that, and I just think that the league missed one here big time." Mika Zibanejad said, quote, "It's just horrible. Zero respect. I don't know why I'm surprised. It's just horrible," end quote. Wilson was given a double minor penalty for roughing and a 10-minute misconduct for the incident, and an incident that was egregious. It was unacceptable. It crossed the line in hockey, man. It crossed the line in hockey. You got to go above and beyond to cross the line in hockey. The Rangers, after Tom Wilson was not suspended, and by the way, Tom Wilson is a guy that has multiple incidents like this in his back pocket. The guy is a known cheap shot artist. The guy is known as a dude who has put some hits on dudes that would end careers unacceptably. The Rangers put out a statement that said, quote, "The New York Rangers are extremely disappointed that Capitals forward Tom Wilson was not suspended for his horrifying act of violence last night at Madison Square Garden. Wilson is a repeat offender with a long history of these types of acts, and we find it shocking that the NHL and their Department of Player Safety failed to take appropriate action and suspend him indefinitely. Wilson's dangerous and reckless actions caused an injury to Artemi Panarin that will prevent him from playing again this season. We view this as a dereliction of duty by NHL Head of Player Safety George Parros, and we believe he is unfit to continue in his current role, end quote. The Capitals did not respond to the statement, said that they would let the NHL handle the incident. Zoe, I've got to tell you, you have got to be spectacularly bad at your job in a role like Parros to have a team straight up in an age where leagues are very sensitive to teams criticizing them. You have got to be spectacularly bad at your job to get an official team release sent out calling for you to get fired for not protecting the players. That's impressive.
Absolutely. And they've been showing quite a few times the brawl on ESPN, and it's pretty rough. I mean, fighting is part of hockey, but you can go too far, and when you do, you should be punished for it, and he was not.
No, it was absolutely too much. It was absolutely unacceptable. For those of you that are on the stream right now, and if you're not on the stream, join us at facebook.com/ESPN Upstate. For those of you that are on the stream, I'm actually going to share with you the video of what Tom Wilson did, and I will let you decide if it was worthy of a suspension or not. This was the game from Monday between the Rangers and the Capitals. You're going to see Tom Wilson here in just a second. Right there. There's the punch. If you missed it, it's right to the bottom right. And Zoe, I'm sure, I don't know if you can see it there as well, but I want your thoughts. Bottom right of the goal down here, that's Tom Wilson, and that's Panarin right in front of him. After they go down to the ground, watch the punch right here. Boom, there's the punch. That's on Pavlovich. So he's down. Then you've got the brawl that takes place. And Tom Wilson just keeps going. Again, this dude is a guy with a history of being a cheap shot artist, a guy with a history of hitting guys in ways that could end careers. I mean, he ended Arnon's season right there. That injury is going to keep him out for the remainder of the year. You can't let this happen. I know we were talking earlier about what happened in the baseball game that got Garrett suspended for 7 games from MLB. They are the ones, I mean, it blows my mind, though, that baseball is being more responsive. Baseball is being more careful. Baseball is being more responsible for their players than hockey is at this point. It blows my mind that hockey's fallen so far behind that a team is calling for the firing of an NHL official. That's impressively bad.
Well, hockey has talked about in the past removing the fighting from the game, and they have not. And a lot of people go to see hockey because a fight may break out. I mean, it's always the joke that it could break, or a fight broke out in hockey, whatever the saying is. But the fight is one of the things that people go to see. I wonder if this incident had happened 20 years ago, would anybody be talking about it? And I realize that people it's different now, and player safety is more important. But 20 years ago, it would just be ignored like it was just another game.
844-477-3776, 844-GSP-ESPN, Texas on 71307. Start your text with ESPN. We'll read them on the air. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. Twitter trending topics wraps up the show. Zoe's got to go do his real job now, so Diesel will fill in. We're back after this on the Rob Brown Show. It's ESPN Upstate.
Here's what's happening on the internets. Let's see what Rob Brown knows about it. Topic number one is the Belgian border.
Yes, I actually know this. Listen to this. There's a spot where France and Belgium are meet, right? And so they marked it with these big stone markers, but one of these markers cut across the field of a farmer, and whenever he would go out to run the tractor over his field, he would have to work around it. So eventually he got tired. He didn't know what the marker was for. He eventually got tired of it. He picked up the marker and moved it from the Belgian side to the French side, like 8 feet or 9 feet. So he basically increased the size of Belgium and decreased the size of France by moving a rock for a couple of days. They both kind of laughed it off, like, all right, we're not going to start a war over it. But he didn't know what it was, so he just made Belgium bigger for fun.
That's
on
cool.
accident.
Next up, RIP Boston George.
Boston George, I'm going to assume is a person that I should know off the top of my head, but don't.
He looks to be some sort of, like, partier, and there's a lot of photos. There's a lot of photos of him with, like, with actors. So maybe he's maybe he was an inspiration for a movie part or something.
No idea. No idea. No idea. I got nothing.
Okay. Let's move on from that one then. Let's see. Eyes of Texas is trending.
The eyes of Texas are upon you all the live long day. So this is there's a lot going on. So this song is creating a very volatile dispute, disagreement, whatever, at the University of Texas, Austin. There was a push at the beginning claiming that the song The Eyes of Texas is based in racist roots. Whether it is or is not, you can do your own research and decide if you agree or disagree with them. But now nearly 180 faculty members at UT Austin have signed a petition calling for the song's removal from the school. A student group was hosting a virtual meeting about the song with a UT Austin professor when a man entered the online Zoom chat with his face covered, holding up a gun. And apparently, I'm looking through the story because I didn't get a chance to read the story before it came up for Twitter Trending Topics, but apparently was on the group that wants the song to stay. Here's what I'm going to tell you. If you want to have a good, genuine debate about the song, that's one thing. If you show up with a ski mask and a gun to try to enforce your point, you're going to lose a lot of people that might have otherwise been on your side. Anyway, so there's a big dispute about whether that song should continue. Diesel, there at one point, the school president suggested an idea where he would have two separate marching bands, one that would represent the school and would play The Eyes of Texas, the other that would be made up of students who wanted to play and perform but did not want to be a part of the actual school band and not be forced to play The Eyes of Texas. I'm just glad it's not me that has to go through this, is all I'm going to say.
Yeah, and you really think the University of Texas is going to give up, what, 30, 40 seats and ticket sales? No, they're not going to give that up. By the way, I went back and found out who this guy Boston George was.
Okay.
He is the inspiration for the character for George. His name is George Jung. He was the inspiration for the character and the character that Johnny Depp portrayed in the movie Blow.
Ah, gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Which is a great movie still, by the way.
Yeah, I haven't seen it in a long time. I need to go back and watch that one again.
Holds up.
Johnny Depp is like, he does some really good stuff, and he does some real crap.
Yep.
Like, real crap.
He does that within one franchise.
Yeah, Dark Shadows. Awful.
Oh, Dark Shadows. By the way, have you watched What We Do in the Shadows?
No.
Dude, one of the funniest television shows
I've ever
seen.
We can't talk about it on a family radio show.
Hey, welcome back to the show, Diesel.
Hey.
Welcome back to the show, buddy.
Next up trending is House of the Dragon.
House of the Dragon is a Game of Thrones prequel / spinoff that will be based on the Targaryen family's rise to fame and then downfall before the events in Game of Thrones. And I don't know, Zolite or Diesel, hey. That's one. That's my one for the day. I don't know, Diesel. Game of Thrones ended so poorly and so terribly and so dumpster fiery that there's part of me that's like, I don't want to get invested in this prequel spinoff that leads to Game of Thrones because I know that it just leads to the ending of Game of Thrones, and I ain't trying to deal with that garbage again.
Yeah, you know what they did? They saw Better Call Saul, and they're like, well, why not? It worked for Breaking Bad.
Yeah, but the thing is, like, if they get the two losers who wrote the ending of Game of Thrones off, it's got potential to be the caliber of the first five seasons of Game of Thrones, which was, I think, the greatest television show ever made, and I stand by that. But if you go too deep down that rabbit hole, it's like you're just leading me back to where I was hurt before and the bad people touched me.
Well, the problem with prequels is it doesn't give you a whole lot of creativity to work on the story as you're writing it. It has a relatively set ending. Now, how you get there, you can sort of play with a little bit here and there, but you can't change the ending because the ending of this is the beginning of the next one. You can't mess with it too much. And I don't know. I mean, sure, I'd love a paycheck, but I don't know that I'd want to be a creator where I'm so limited like that. I don't know.
That's a tough spot. But keep in mind, I mean, look, Game of Thrones for five seasons, like I said, I think was the greatest television show ever made. And they had way more restrictive guidelines. I mean, they had books they had to at least – I mean, they took creative liberties, but they had to stay relatively close to the content of the book itself. And they still managed to screw it. I don't know, man. Like, I'm not going to set myself up to be hurt again. Diesel, I'm just not going to let myself be hurt again. Right, I've been hurt too much.
If you want to take this on, we only have a few seconds. Brian Kilmeade is trending.
No, I don't, but thank you for asking. That's very kind of you. I know better.
He's a Fox and Friends guy who blasted a sixth grader.
Yeah. Y'all go watch it on Twitter. Make up your own mind. I'm not even talking about it. Not even touching it. All right, that's it. Thanks to Diesel for filling in for Zoe. Thanks to Zoe for the hard work. We'll be back tomorrow to do it all over again. Thanks for hanging out, boys and girls. My name is Rob Brown. Don't drink and drive. I'll punch you in the face. Have a great rest of your day. It's the Rob Brown Show on ESPN Upstate. Later.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.